6 Common Errors in Establishing Rapport. As with any hypnotic or persuasive technique, rapport building has its own set of fatal errors. You need to be aware of these fatal errors because, at the outset, they don't look like mistakes, but they can really reduce your effectiveness as a communicator and conversational hypnotist. Mark these 6 common errors so they don't ruin your chances of persuading or influencing someone to do what is beneficial for both parties. Fatal error number 1. The first mistake is being too pleasant to the subject. Now, I'm not saying that you should be brash and rude to your subjects. If you do that, no one would want to even speak with you, and people would probably avoid talking to you in the future. No, what I'm saying is that you should avoid being too nice or pleasant to the subject if this will prevent you from being an effective communicator. Because, in the end, the core of true hypnosis is still effective human communication. There is no substitute for being able to communicate well with other people. You can forget all about hypnosis if you think communication in itself does not have the ability to help you get what you want from social interactions. Some of you might be wondering, how in the world can being pleasant obstruct the process of communication? Well, think about it. When we try to be too nice to other people, we often sacrifice our own ideas and emotions so we do not even marginally offend the other person. A person who is overly nice will focus too much on the idea that the subject has to find the whole interaction pleasant, fun, and stress-free. While this in itself is a plausible goal, it doesn't necessarily mean that all effective social interactions have to fit into this mold. For example, if you are a mentor and you need to train someone so that he could become an effective employee, being overly nice will reduce your effectiveness because you will hold back most of the time. You won't want to challenge the subject in any way, so his progress will be very slow, and the whole teaching process will be ineffective. So always remember, never be so pleasant to the point that you can no longer express yourself effectively to the other person. This is the antidote to the problem. It may not appear to be the sweetest medicine, but trust me, it works. Fatal error number 2. The second fatal mistake is trying too hard to achieve an outcome. Now, we all want to produce specific outcomes in different situations. If you are on a romantic date, you would, of course, want the other person to find you pleasant and attractive. If you are being interviewed for a rewarding new job, you would want the HR manager to think that you are the best candidate for the job. Each social situation has its ideal outcomes, and there is nothing wrong with working hard to achieve an outcome that will bring the most benefit to you. So when does working hard become trying too hard? Simple. Your efforts become less effective when desperation and anxiety become part of your formula. When you are desperate for something, the subconscious thought processes that help strengthen your ability to communicate to the subject are impeded. Not only that, the desperation and anxiety also show up in your voice, speech, and actions. We are talking about 3 distinct communication channels, not just the verbal channel or speech channel. Very few people can tolerate desperate people, so if you are talking to a group of people, those folks will most likely feel that you are not confident at all, and your words should not be completely trusted. There is also the principle of reversed effect. The principle of reversed effect centers on the fact that when you feel aversive towards a particular situation, that is, you are anxious about getting a result, the opposite often takes place. So instead of impressing that HR manager, you end up fumbling during the interview and missing your chance at getting that dream job. So the more desperate you become, the lower your chances of actually getting what you want. The same applies to rapport. When a person becomes desperate in establishing rapport, he misses the unconscious cues emanating from the subject. He becomes preoccupied with his own mood and emotions. His energy and focus becomes divided. As a hypnotist, you must learn how to fall into a natural rhythm with your subject. This natural rhythm cannot be effectively taught. It is learned as you apply the principle of rapport building. You will feel it in your gut when you talk to another person, and things just click into place. Fatal error number 3. The third fatal mistake is expecting something from another person too much. Almost everyone has been in a situation where the other person becomes almost unbearably pushy because he wants something from you. For example, a car salesman may become too eager to get a sale from you, so he tries to be extremely nice and extremely accommodating. He doesn't understand that being too pushy actually reduces his chances of getting the target result, because the other person will eventually tire of what he's doing. Some folks might see this as simply determination or passion, but in the world of hypnosis, it is a fatal error that destroys the continuity and potency of human communication. Instead of being able to fully communicate what's in your mind, this particular attitude will actually disrupt the harmony between the speaker and the subject. If you come on to your subject too quickly and too strongly, chances are he will back off because he feels like you're getting into his personal space and he's not comfortable with what you're doing at all. If your subject backs off, the trust level goes down quickly and you will lose your influence over the other person. If you don't want this to happen to you when you are eager to impress your boss or when you're trying to land a date, you need to utilize the principle of fractionated rapport. Fractionated rapport is actually very easy to do, and you don't have to be an expert hypnotist in order to use it in day-to-day interactions. Fractionation is defined as separating, as a mixture, into different portions. You can think of rapport as a special solution that will speed up the hypnotic process. If you pour all of the solution at once, you're not going to get that magical reaction that will allow you to influence or persuade the other person more easily. But if you pour the solution little by little, you're going to get a much better response from your subject. So remember, don't try to hasten rapport beyond what is deemed reasonable for the current situation. You have to gauge the interaction so you can determine how you can safely establish rapport without scaring your subject away. Again, this is something that can only be learned through direct application. Don't worry, you can easily gauge an interaction by paying attention to the small feedbacks from your subject. For example, if you gave your subject a compliment and he warms up to you after the compliment, then you're probably headed down the right path. Inversely, if you gave your subject a compliment and his forehead suddenly creases, you are probably coming on too strongly, and you should slowly back off so you won't irritate or annoy the other person. Fatal error number 4. The fourth fatal mistake is not having sufficient, genuine interest in your subject. As the speaker and the conversational hypnotist, it is your job to build your interest in the subject no matter what. Because at the end of the day, your subject and his reaction to what you're doing is all that matters. You are not at the center of the interaction. The other person is. This is the setup because you are the one who wants to produce a specific outcome from engagement. If you put yourself at the center of the interaction, there is a big possibility that you will end up alienating the subject. You will become preoccupied with pleasing yourself instead of listening carefully to what the other person is saying. Now, what happens when the speaker is not genuinely interested in what the subject has to say? The speaker can feign interest. He can pretend that he's interested by mimicking the body language and speech pattern of someone who is interested. And sometimes, this might work, especially if the subject is not particularly perceptive. But what happens when you are interacting with a subject who is naturally critical of other people in social interactions? What happens if your subject is naturally perceptive and can smell a disinterested person a mile away? Obviously, the interaction will not be very productive at all. A person who tries to project the opposite of what he truly feels and thinks will eventually fail, because the human body itself sends out signals to the world that you cannot fully control. These micro-signals can be picked up by anyone who can see and hear you. Unless you are a pro at deceiving people, these signals of boredom and disinterest will reach your subject eventually, and you will be found out. Is there actually a solution to this big problem? Can disinterest be solved during a live interaction with another person? Fortunately, the answer is yes. You can do something about it. And you can perform damage control in an instant by utilizing one or both of the following solutions. 1. By having an unconditional respect for the subject. 2. By performing a track back during the whole conversation. The first solution is having unconditional respect for the subject. You will visualize that the other person is someone who is very important to you, so that your verbal, vocal, and nonverbal language channels will respond immediately. Yes, it is essentially pretending. But it is a powerful way of utilizing the imagination to create a strong impact on another person in real life. The goal of the first solution is to communicate to the other person that you are not a threat and that his input is important. We cannot force ourselves to really love what the other person is saying, but we can communicate effectively that we are there to actively listen to the subject's input. The second solution is performing a track back during the whole conversation. A track back is strategic verbal repetition. It should be used hand in hand with other principles of active listening. I would like to emphasize that a track back is actually more effective than plain paraphrasing. Let me explain. When a person paraphrases another person's words, the emotional content and tone often changes. Here's an example. Person A: I was happily walking down the street, hugging my new puppy so tightly. Person B: Oh, so you were holding your puppy while you were walking. A facile reading will reveal that person B was just saying out loud what he had heard, and technically there's nothing wrong with what he said. But if you read aloud the words, you will see immediately that the two statements are not completely congruent with each other. To increase the effectiveness of a track back in any conversation, the language has to be the same. If the language has changed too much, the impact is reduced, and the words that you will be using will become distracting to the subject. The subject will end up silently disagreeing with you because your words do not reflect the thoughts and emotions that the other person is trying to convey to you. Here's a better way of repeating what your subject is saying to you. Person A: I was driving down the highway one night, and this deer suddenly appeared out of nowhere and scared me so badly. Person B: Oh, so you're driving one night, and this deer just jumped out of nowhere and scared you? How awful! You don't have to copy the other person's words verbatim, but you must remember to stick to the key phrases or key words that were used so you don't veer away from the general direction that the subject has taken. This way, your subject won't have any reason to resist your own input because you have been so good in showing how receptive you are to his own ideas and inputs. If you don't like the idea of copying most of the words used by the other person, you need to establish a track-back frame before paraphrasing. You need to say something like, "Let me see if I got this correctly. You said..." In a way, you are informing the other person that you are flexing your mental muscles, and you will be showing just how well you were listening to what the other person was saying. The effect on the subject will be just as effective so long as you establish the frame first before repeating the input you have just received. Fatal error number 5. The fifth fatal mistake is playing the wrong role during a social engagement. It's no secret that modern human society perpetuates social statuses. We thrive or suffer in society because of the statuses that are bestowed upon us by institutions and groups that we belong to. A person rarely creates a status for himself. You can say that we are thrown into particular statuses before we can do anything about it. Social statuses become painfully obvious during social engagements. Some people like to live up to their status and reputation, and they would not willingly change their status during an interaction because they are afraid that people would actually look down on them. Social statuses are very real, and you should always take them into full consideration, especially when you are talking to someone that you have just met. But here's the thing. Social status alone does not make a person great or influential. A person's social status is just one component that can either contribute or reduce a person's public projection. There will be times when you will be forced to lower your own social status because the other person is inflexible, and he has to play the role of the big man or the boss during the conversation. If you are always forced to a lower social status when you are talking to people, you will always take a back seat, and you will not be able to effectively influence your subject. You can solve this problem through pacing and leading. Essentially, you will be matching the other person's communication style at the beginning of the conversation so you can modify it later on. So if the other person is acting high and mighty, you will match him by playing the underdog for a short period of time. This will allow you to gain the other person's trust. When he begins to trust you, you will gently adjust your own communication method so that you can either become an equal or a leader in the conversation. A person's social status will take a back seat in the hands of a skilled hypnotist. Remember that. Fatal error number 6. The sixth fatal mistake is focusing solely on deep contextual rapport. When I ask people about rapport, I usually hear things like, "Rapport is getting into the heart of the other person so you can think and talk like him." This type of rapport is actually called deep rapport, and it's what most people want to achieve when they want to make a genuine connection with other people. There's nothing wrong with deep rapport. In fact, people who have best friends all have deep rapport with their closest buddies. But does this mean that it's the best rapport for someone who is out to influence or persuade different people? Here's an example to put things into perspective. Let's say you have a professor in college who has a very big influence in the graduate program of the university. Now, you know this person will probably have a big impact on your education later on in life, so you do everything to impress him. You talk to him after class, and you discuss great academic-related stuff with the person. Your professor enjoys your diligence at school and reciprocates your efforts at reaching out to him. You are able to connect with the professor at a level that few other students can match. You are a genius student in the eyes of the professor. And then you meet your professor at a local bar. It's early evening, and your professor is genuinely happy to see a familiar face in such a relaxed atmosphere. Obviously, your professor wouldn't want to talk about academics because the location or environment calls for something else. However, you feel awkward talking to your professor in an environment that is different from what you are used to. You begin to fumble, and eventually, you too run out of things to talk about. If you look at our example carefully, the bar situation is actually a prime opportunity for a person to establish deeper and more personal bonds with the subject. And yet, this type of interaction wasn't very effective because the speaker only had a deep, contextual rapport with the subject. The speaker did not know how to relate to the subject in a different environment, and thus, failure became inevitable. The problem with deep rapport is that it directly limits your ability to relate to another person in a variety of situations. If you want to become a true master of conversational hypnosis, you have to be an effective conversationalist first. And this can only be truly possible if you have wide rapport. There are two ways to establish wide rapport with another person. The first method is to simply meet and interact with your subject in different situations, so that the other person would be able to develop a well-rounded image of what you are really about. The second method is utilizing effective storytelling. If you cannot meet and interact with your subject in different situations and environments, you can just share different kinds of stories with your subject so he will have a better appreciation of your personality and your attitude towards different issues and life experiences. The hypnotic vortex. The classical method of establishing rapport is talking to the other person and actively listening so that he begins to share more of what he's thinking and feeling at the moment. The ultimate goal of rapport is to create this instant bond between the speaker and the subject. We are going to enhance that process right now with a potent technique called rapport hooks through the hypnotic vortex. Rapport hooks are actually subconscious cues placed strategically throughout a conversation to generate interest in what you are saying so that the subject will feel that he needs to know more about what you're saying. Too often, people make the fatal mistake of laying down everything they have to offer at once. When you do this, your subject will feel that you are somewhat desperate to please him or her, and this will reduce the authoritative image that you want to project. Remember, desperation and anxiety have no place in hypnosis, influence, or persuasion. So as someone who wants to master conversational hypnosis, you have to exert a lot of continuous effort to ensure that these negative elements will never take the fore when you are trying to express yourself effectively in front of other people. How can you use rapport hooks to engage other people in an instant? Here's an example to show you just how easy it is to use rapport hooks in any situation. I arrived in the building because I was supposed to meet with my broker. I was welcomed by a bunch of guys in dark suits, and they asked me if they could talk to me for a few minutes. I didn't want to disappoint them, so I said, all right, let's talk. To cut the story short, I was still able to leave the building in one piece, but I missed my meeting with my broker. Did you notice anything about how I relayed information in the example? There was indeed a story there, and I did give out some important stuff related to my story. But in the end, the story was incomplete. It was missing a lot of important details, and that is really what hooks in the subject. By removing some important details from what you are saying, you will be able to create a natural interest in your story. People will become hungry for more. Rapport hooks are extremely convenient tools because you don't have to be a brilliant speaker in order to use them. So even if you have a very simple story to tell, you can create and sustain rapport throughout a social engagement by using hooks throughout the conversation. When you feel that you are slowly losing your subject or audience, you just have to tweak your inputs so that your subject's mind will automatically be alerted that there's something missing from what you are saying. Of course, you will still provide the necessary details, but you are going to make your subject work for it. You are going to wait until the full effect of the hooks begins to manifest. The number one sign that we are looking for is questions. When your subject begins to ask questions out of the blue, you can be assured that rapport is being created as you continue to engage the subject. Rapport hooks can also be used for the effective fractionation of rapport. Remember our short lesson on fractionating rapport? You can regulate rapport by allowing the subject to set the pace of the conversation. You give a little information, gain the interest of the subject, and wait a bit for the questions. When a subject is able to comfortably formulate questions, that means the speaker is not pressuring the subject at all. You are not breathing down the other person's neck, and that in itself is a great thing, because a comfortable and trusting subject is 90% there already. He's in the zone, and he is more likely to say yes to your offer. Here's another example of how simple rapport hooks or cues can be used to create an instant buzz about what you want to share with your audience. I recently visited a small town in Africa where diabetes, heart diseases, and cancers are virtually unheard of. They grow a strange plant there, and they eat it every single day. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we can grow that simple plant here so we can reap its health benefits too? If you listen to the second example, you can see the arc of the story very clearly. There's context, and there are some supporting details, but I have strategically left out the most important detail of all. The name of the plant, and what people in the town were using it for. Curiosity is automatically increased because people don't like it when they hear an incomplete story. Perfecting your skill in detecting signals. Signal detection is one of the most essential skills that you will ever encounter in hypnosis. The ability to read all kinds of signals emanating from other people will set you apart from other would-be hypnotists who are too focused on language patterns and whatnot. Many people forget that before you can employ sophisticated language patterns and complicated hypnotic techniques, you have to be a good communicator first. And to be a good communicator, you need to relearn how to listen and observe your subject during a conversation. You also have to reinforce within yourself the new role that you are playing whenever you speak to other people. You are now the authority, the leader during social engagements. You have to be a leader because people will only be influenced or persuaded if they feel that they are in the presence of a pack leader or an authority. How does one become a good pack leader? How does one become an expert communicator? The answer is not getting a new suit or a shiny pair of Gucci shoes. The answer is not buying a sports car or spraying new perfume from an insanely expensive brand. Those things may contribute to your physical image or projection, but they do nothing to improve how you actually relate to other people in the first place. If you want an essential skill that improves how you relate to people in any social engagement, you need to be able to detect and decode signals given off by other people. By reading other people's signals, you will learn things about them even before they've spoken. Let me share with you two stories about Milton Erickson, who is one of the founding fathers of hypnosis. The first story is about a patient who walked into Milton Erickson's office and told him that he is but one of dozens of psychiatrists that the patient has already visited. Milton Erickson looks at the patient briefly and said, "Madame, in a moment I am going to tell you something that will probably shock you,
But only after I have told you this will you realize that I will be able to provide the right therapy for you. Madame, how long have you been a woman? It turns out that the patient, who appeared to be a woman, was actually a man. The man had studied how women talked and moved, but something still gave away his secret. Milton Erickson, on the other hand, was able to spot a signal that was not congruent with what he associated with women. Erickson had noticed that the patient actually brushed against a breast when the patient moved an arm to emphasize something while speaking. For Erickson, this was a clear sign that the woman was not actually a woman, because real women learn from a young age how to move around properly so they won't hit or brush against their bosoms. It was only natural for a woman to be comfortable and adept in a woman's body. Our second story is still about Erickson's amazing ability to discover truth and fact just by looking at micro-signals coming from people around him. The story goes like this. One day, Milton Erickson was walking down a hallway in a hospital when he sees a female colleague. As he passes by his colleague, he casually says, "Congratulations on the new baby." The female colleague was shocked when she heard this. She had just visited her doctor, and she had just learned that she was pregnant a few minutes ago. Milton Erickson, on the other hand, was able to see some changes in the colleague that convinced him that she was pregnant. Perhaps the shape of her pelvic region had changed a little since they last talked, or perhaps the woman's hairline had also changed because of her pregnancy. Erickson's stories illustrate just how powerful signal detection can be, especially if you are a hypnotic practitioner. Often it would be more beneficial for the hypnotist to learn things about the subject even before they start talking about it. This gives a hypnotist an edge during the social engagement. By decoding important, nonverbal signals from your subject, you would be able to formulate effective responses ahead of time. For example, if your subject's nonverbal signals are saying, "I'm hungry and bored," you can do something to remedy that problem even without asking your subject about it. You can show your subject just how perceptive you are by using the information you are getting from reading his verbal, nonverbal, and vocal channels. Introduction to Trance Signal Recognition. When you start building rapport with another person, your subject will begin to go into a hypnotic trance. Now, I have to clarify that a person can go into a trance after a long induction, or he can go under after a brief, almost instant induction. However, you have to understand that trance states have varying degrees. If a trance state was induced through an instant induction technique, the trance state would be relatively shallow, and you would have to build rapport and work towards deepening the trance state as you speak to your subject. How would you know if a person was already going into a trance? There are several signals that you must keep in mind. First, trance signal. The first trance signal is the dilation of the pupils. Normally, a person would have relatively contracted pupils when speaking to others. This means the person is awake and his conscious thought processes are in full swing. A critical person would have contracted pupils because he is deep in thought and he is analyzing the inputs of the speaker. When you establish rapport with another person and he really gets into what you are telling him, his body and mind begin to relax. This is the reason why the pupils will begin to dilate or open up. Pupil dilation is a sign that the person is no longer defensive or uncomfortable when talking to you. Now, I have to remind everyone that sometimes pupil dilation occurs because of other factors. For example, if you are speaking to your subject outdoors and the sun is high in the sky, the eyes won't dilate too much because there's too much light in the surroundings. Inversely, a person's eyes would dilate naturally in a dim environment because it's adjusting to the available lighting. You would have to see if the pupil dilation is occurring within the context of your conversation or if it's occurring because of external factors. Second trance signal. The second trance signal is a lower pulse rate. I know a lot of people are reacting right now because normally we keep track of the pulse by touching and holding certain points on the arm. I am aware that the pulse is tracked in this manner. However, we are not after an exact pulse rate or pulse count when we are conversing with another person. What we want to get is a general impression of the other person's pulse rate. How can you do this? Well, you can check the other person's neck, because there are often large veins there that are very close to the skin, and you can actually perceive the pulse rate by watching the movement of the veins under the skin. By watching the subject's neck, you will be able to get a good impression of his pulse rate. The intensity of the movement at the side of the neck is sufficient to determine if the other person is relaxed or agitated. Trust me, once you actually start focusing on this particular aspect of your subject, observing it will begin to feel more natural later on, and it will become part of the group of signals that you will be monitoring regularly during social engagements. When a person enters a relaxed trance state, his pulse rate will go down. This has been proven time and time again in different studies and experiments. A successful hypnotic induction through any method or technique will cause relaxation and subsequently a lower pulse rate. Now, a lower pulse rate is a good sign if that was your goal in the first place. For example, if you are talking to a client that has had a bad experience with your company in the past, you would, of course, want this person to relax and be comfortable in your company. Thus, a lower pulse rate is more desirable in this particular situation. However, if you are speaking to a person or to a group of people so as to get them excited over something, the more logical thing you would want to do would be to get their pulse rate up. If you want someone to become excited about something, you would know that you are achieving something if you can get your subject's pulse rate to increase. Third trance signal. The third trance signal is an altered breathing rate and breathing pattern. It is very important that you are able to compare the breathing rate and pattern of your subject before you started speaking and after you've attempted to establish some level of rapport between you and the subject. If you cannot compare, you won't be able to confirm if what you are doing is actually working. Now, you have to be very careful when checking another person's breathing because people don't usually do it. Normally, we look at another person's chest to check how he's breathing. This is fine if you're talking to a male subject. But what happens if you stare long enough at a female subject's chest? You probably understand what I'm trying to arrive at, so I'm not going to elaborate anymore. How do you solve this problem? How do you check another person's breathing pattern and breathing rate without staring at his or her chest? The solution's quite simple. Use your peripheral vision. If you drive a car, you probably know how useful your peripheral vision is when you're out on the road. Your peripheral vision allows you to scrutinize your surroundings without necessitating a full head turn. You are able to see your left side and right side without having to move your head or stare directly at those sides. I want you to use your peripheral vision to see if you are having an effect on your subject. When a person enters a hypnotic trance state, his breathing rate will begin to change. It will begin to slow down, like his pulse rate. As for the breathing pattern, this too will change as you continue to establish rapport. For example, most people who have just arrived in a meeting have very erratic breathing patterns because they've rushed from the elevator or the car just to get to the meeting on time. As they begin to relax in your presence, their breathing pattern will begin to normalize as a result of your rapport-building skills. You can also check this signal to see if you are having the appropriate effect on your subject. For example, if you want your subject to become excited about something, again, the breathing rate needs to change because a person's breathing is actually directly linked to his thoughts and emotions. If the goal is excitement, and your subject's breathing pattern is communicating sleep and boredom, you need to change what you are doing because you obviously aren't generating the desired effect on the other person. Fourth trance signal. The fourth trance signal is changes in facial features. Like a person's pupil size, breathing rate, breathing pattern, and pulse rate, the entirety of the human face also reflects a person's state of mind. This is probably the easiest trance signal to detect and decode because one look will tell you if your hypnotic techniques are working. Often, we look at the people's faces and we are able to tell if the other person is angry, happy, or sad. I want you to do exactly what you used to do, only this time, I want you to check if your subject's facial features are actually smoothening out. Of course, smoothening out is relative to how a person actually looks. If you're talking to someone who is naturally wrinkly, do not expect the wrinkles on his skin to disappear just because he is in a trance state. No, what we are looking for is the relaxation of the facial muscles. You see, when a person is in a critical mind frame, and his mind is trying to find incongruence in what the other person is saying, the whole face will reflect this mindset. So when you see a lot of creases and folds in a person's face while you are talking, he is still not relaxed, and to a certain extent, he still does not fully trust what you are saying. When a person begins to trust what you are saying, you will probably notice that his face will become more symmetrical than before. The increased symmetry is due to the relaxation of the facial muscles. When facial muscles relax, they go back to their natural resting areas in the face, and the skin is pulled back to its normal appearance. Fifth trance signal. The fifth trance signal is increased attention. People rarely pay attention to something if they are not truly interested in what the speaker is saying. Our cognitive resources are naturally limited, so we don't spend our cognitive resources haphazardly. We don't pay attention to something unless we feel that it would have a bearing on our own reservoir of personal resources. For example, financial resources, mental resources, etc. How would you know that what you're doing is causing the other person to pay more attention and focus to your words? Check out your subject's eyes. A person who is paying close attention to something would look slightly glazed over. His eyes will be fixed on you or something in close proximity to you. For example, a pin clipped to your shirt. The eyes would be fixed on a single point, and there will not be a lot of movement there, too. It's as if the person was suddenly shocked into a statue-like state. This strange state is actually hypnosis in action. Sixth trance signal. The sixth trance signal is changes in a person's blinking. Unlike a person's breathing and pulse rate, any change in a person's blinking pattern and blinking rate is a good thing in the context of rapport building and hypnosis. Observe your subject carefully. Did his blinking actually stop at one point while you were telling him something quite captivating? This is very normal, and it just shows how well you are handling the social engagement. The frozen eyelids signal is actually called catalepsis. It is a natural and temporary state wherein the muscles controlling the eyelids are momentarily stopped because of the triggered trance state. Another related signal is the fatigued eyelids. A person who has already been hypnotized will feel so relaxed that his eyelids will begin to droop. The subject is not bored, he's just in trance, and that is a good thing. Seventh trance signal. The seventh trance signal is changes in how a person swallows. People swallow regularly to prevent their saliva from overflowing. Since saliva is produced continuously, we actually swallow several times per minute to avoid making a mess. Now, did you know that this automatic swallowing mechanism is also affected when a person enters a trance state? When a person enters a trance state, his swallowing rate actually increases. You can easily check if the other person is swallowing more frequently by watching his Adam's apple. This trance signal might be a little more difficult to track if you are conversing with a woman, so use your peripheral vision again. I would not recommend staring at a woman's neck during a conversation, because the neck is considered a private space and the subject might become offended or embarrassed that you are staring at her neck. And the neck is close to the chest, so your actions might be misinterpreted, and this might ultimately break your rapport with your subject. Eighth trance signal. The eighth trance signal is reduced mobility. Remember those times when you are watching a really good movie at home and you're just frozen on your bed or on your couch? You may not have been aware of it, but at that exact moment you were in a hypnotic trance state and you had reduced mobility because of the trance state. You can achieve the same impact and effect on another person through rapport. It is actually very easy to see if your rapport-building efforts are having any effect on your subject. You see, most people use different kinds of gestures to get their point across during conversations. Some people like using their fingers to enumerate things while talking, while some folks even swing their arms around to emphasize the scope of what they are talking about. These common gestures will be affected when a person is in a trance state. These gestures will begin to slow down, and eventually your subject will begin to show signs of temporary immobility. The slower and less frequent your subject's gestures, the deeper his trance state is. Ninth trance signal. The ninth trance signal is involuntary movements. Our muscles are governed by both conscious and subconscious drives. In addition, some people have involuntary muscle movements or twitches that only appear when they are in a deep hypnotic trance. They don't pay much attention to these twitches and movements, but that doesn't mean that we can't detect them. When these involuntary movements become more frequent and the person isn't moving much as you speak, you can be sure that the person is in trance, and he is focused intently on what you are saying. Tenth trance signal. The 10th trance signal is changes in the color or tone of the skin. Our skin tone and skin color are determined not only by melanin, natural pigments, but also by blood flow. The state of our blood circulation is often revealed by our skin. There are two distinct changes that you might want to watch out for during a social engagement. The first change is the darkening of the skin. This signals an increase in the blood flow in a given area. If a person is extremely engaged in what you are saying and his pulse rate is up, it is common for the skin around the face to become flushed with red. The second signal is the opposite of darkening. When a person's skin becomes a little pale, that is a sign that blood flow is being restricted. Both paling and darkening are signs that you are creating a big impact on your subject. 11th trance signal. The 11th trance signal that you should watch out for is an increase in subconscious responses or feedback. Humans have two kinds of responses, conscious feedback and unconscious feedback. If a person has to formulate a response before expressing it, that is called conscious feedback. But if a person expresses agreement or disagreement almost instantaneously and without much thought, then that is called unconscious or passive feedback. Passive feedback is the type of response that is associated with hypnotic trance states. Because when a person enters a trance state, the conscious mind becomes extremely focused on what is taking place. It doesn't pay attention anymore to less important things like nonverbal responses to the speaker.